Okay, so we are now recording. So as always, welcome everyone, and it's always wonderful to be here with you, and it's always wonderful to see your beautiful faces, and great to practice this journey with you of mindfulness and meditation that we do together every week, and when we're not together as well. But meeting every week holds us in a space that is supportive and is very appreciative. So a blessing as always. Okay, so we are now a week away from Erev Rosh Hashanah. Would you believe it? Next Friday. Wow. So next Friday marks the last day of Elul, the first day of Tishrei. Erev Rosh Hashanah is actually the first day of Tishrei. The month of Elul traditionally brings us all to tshuva, return. And the month of Elul has called us to return, I think, with an open heart and a loving heart, so that we could begin to forgive ourselves and others. And it's a return to who we are, what we are, where we are, just as the words of Hashiveinu say. A return to our essence without the veils with which we walk around usually. And we've begun to focus on repentance and forgiveness, which intensifies between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Tshuva is the opportunity for introspection, for inspiration to return to our true selves, our essence, our core beings, an opportunity to listen to the small voice within more intensely, to take stock of our minds, emotions, bodies, and souls, to consider when and how we may have missed the mark, and to forgive ourselves and others with compassion, to pause, to reflect, and to ask ourselves, how can we prepare for the new year? How can we open our hearts to receive God's chesed? Questions of where we are in our lives, what we're truly interested in, what spiritual food nourishes our souls, do our actions actually correlate with the values we uphold? This is our cheshbon nefesh, our accounting of our souls. We listen to the shofar every day of Elul, and 100 shofar blasts on Rosh Hashanah. As Rabbi Alan Liu of blessed memory said, it is the same sound that filled the world when the Torah was spoken into being on Mount Sinai. When the shofar sounds 100 times, it blows open the gates of heaven. When the shofar sounds 100 times, it forms a bridge between heaven and earth. And we enter heaven on that bridge. And when the shofar sounds 100 times, it cracks the shell of our awareness wide open. And suddenly we find ourselves in heaven. When the shofar sounds 100 times, we hear the voice of heaven in it. We experience revelation of God's voice coming down to earth on the same bridge that we used to go up to heaven. The shofar is a plea and a visual reminder to allow ourselves to genuinely embrace this journey of renewal, in which we are always in the process of, and which we are not certain about, and in which we are in the unknown, in which we are willing to tumble and twist and turn in our desire to become more whole, more true to ourselves, to be our truest self, to touch the divine within us. The sound of the shofar, an ancient alarm, rouses us from indifference, moves us to action, and renews our conviction to keep going despite seemingly insurmountable challenges. As we listen to the shofar sounds, the same sounds that were heard on Mount Sinai, new possibilities of understanding and trust may arise. Aviva Zornberg says, the sound of the shofar is a call for transcendence, It evokes an irrational world of non-linear time, of surmounting the unyielding accountability in order to reach an even higher truth, an affirmative one, one of chesed, loving kindness. Shema, listen, lev shomea, a listening heart, to listen beyond words, to open the heart, to open with love. Our meditation practice allows us to be still, to observe, to breathe in, to breathe out, to listen inwardly to the still small voice deep inside, to our divine core, and to listen outwardly to our surroundings, to our environment. We listen beyond words. We listen with our essence. We listen with our core being in the stillness of our bodies, in the silence. When is it hard to listen? What stops us from listening with our hearts? This is a little story from Rabbi Alan Liu of blessed memory from his book, This Is Real and You Are Completely Unprepared. It goes like this. Every year before the days of awe, the Baal Shem Tov, the founder of Hasidic Judaism, held a competition to see who would blow the shofar for him on Rosh Hashanah. Now, if you wanted to blow the shofar for the Baal Shem Tov, not only did you have to blow the shofar like a virtuoso, but you also had to learn to elaborate, you also had to learn an elaborate system of kavanot, secret prayers that were said just before you blew the shofar, to direct the shofar blasts and to see that they had the proper effect in the supernal realms. All of the prospective shofar blowers practiced these kavanot for months. They were difficult and complex. There was one fellow who wanted to blow the shofar for the Baal Shem Tov so badly that he had been practicing these kavanot for years. But when his time came to audition before the Baal Shem Tov, he realized that nothing he had done had prepared him adequately for the experience standing before him, before this great and holy man, and he choked. His mind froze completely. He couldn't remember one of the kavanot he had practiced for all those years, and he couldn't even remember what he was supposed to be doing at all. He just stood before the Baal Shem Tov in utter silence, and then, when he realized how egregiously, how utterly he had failed this great test, his heart just broke in two, and he began to weep, sobbing loudly, his shoulders heaving and his whole body racking as he wept. "All right, you're hired," the Baal Shem Tov said. "But I don't understand," the man said. "I failed the test completely. I couldn't even remember one kavanah." So the Baal Shem Tov explained with the following parable. In the palace of the king, there are many secret chambers, and there are secret keys for each chamber. But one key unlocks them all, and that key is the axe. The king is the lord of the universe, the Baal Shem Tov explained. The palace is the house of God. The secret chambers are the sphirot, the ascending spiritual realms that bring us closer and closer to God when we perform commandments such as blowing the shofar with the proper intention. And the secret keys are the kavanot. And the axe, the key that opens every chamber and brings us directly into the presence of the king, where he may be, the axe is the broken heart. For as it says in the Psalms, God is close to the brokenhearted. Alan Liu's view, Rabbi Alan Liu's view on suffering is that our suffering, the unresolved element of our lives, is also from God. It is the instrument by which we are carried back to God, not something to be defended against, but rather to be embraced. Tomorrow is the Shabbat before Rosh Hashanah, Shabbat Mevarchim, the last Shabbat of Elul. We read Parsha Nitzavim Vayelech, but I'll only be speaking about Nitzavim today. The first verse is, "You stand this day, all of you, before God." So So we bring our whole selves before God. The Parsha goes on to say, when all these things befall you, and the blessing life and good, and the curse death and evil, that I have set before you, and you take them to heart amidst the various nations to which Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, your God, banished you, and you return to Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, your God, and you and your children heed God's command with all your heart and your soul, just as I entreat you this day, then Yud-Heh-Vav-Heh, your God, will restore your fortunes and take you back in love. The Parsha goes on to say, choose life. Love here, when God takes us back, is forgiveness, presence, and awe. Martin Luther King also connects love and forgiveness. He says, we must develop and maintain the capacity to forgive. He who is devoid of the power to forgive is devoid of the power to love. There is some good in the worst of us and some evil in the best of us. When we discover this, we are less prone to hate our enemies. And Mahatma Gandhi said, the weak never forgive. Forgiveness is the attribute of the strong. Does forgiveness come from a place of strength? Does not forgiving, holding on to anger or grudge, harm or weaken us? The Gera Rebbe, a Hasidic rabbi, wrote, in order to accomplish the tikkun, the repair of both the universe and the heart, for which a person has come into the world, one must find the sparks of the divine in one's faults as well as in one's virtues. All of oneself is needed to accomplish the great tikkun. In contemplating blessing and curse within the framework of our meditation mindfulness practice, blessing for me is breath, being still, being silent, being true to oneself, acts of loving kindness, equanimity, and being kind to ourselves and others. And curse is anger, indifference, boredom, impatience with ourselves and others. And I'm sure each of us can add more to both blessing and curse. Rabbi Sheffer Gold's commentary on Netzavim states that we stand before God in our wholeness. This completeness infuses us with the fullness of vitality, presence, and beauty that is necessary in order to receive and give the blessings of covenantal love. The challenge that God gives us to choose life and blessing, to turn away from death, the force of destruction, and curse, the negativity that limits us. Yet what sounds so very simple becomes so very confusing in the moment-to-moment choices that we face. The mind becomes an expert in rationalizing whatever choice might bolster the ego's ambition or defenses. The spiritual challenge, she says, of Netzavim can only be taken up when we learn how to stand before God. In standing fully before God, we can finally embrace our whole selves completely. We can take responsibility for our choices. In standing before God, we become true partners in the work of creation. The practice of for Netzavim is to take special notice when your heart closes. Really notice, does your heart close when you feel judged? When you are in the presence of suffering? When you are stuck in traffic? When you disagree? When you get too busy? When you're in pain? When you read the newspaper? Where are we choosing blessings over curses in our lives? Where are we choosing curses over blessings in our lives? Is forgiving other parts of choosing blessings? So I leave you with those questions to ponder a bit for a couple of minutes. We'll have a couple of minutes of silence, and then we'll open it up for discussion.